TV Corner.
Hey guys, this is Film Core's TV Corner, Game of Thrones. I'm back with Greg and TJ. We're going to talk about episode 3, Oathbreaker, from season 6. How are you guys feeling about it?
I loved it.
Yes.
You loved it? Okay. Great. Why'd you love it so much?
I mean, I think all the problems sort of that we were touching on last week, we kind of got over them. You know, we got over the hump. All the setups finally paid off. And I think all the sort of like tertiary character killings, you know, like Roose Bolton,
Doran.
Yeah.
The Prince of Doran, yeah.
Like, sort of the landscape is now set for us to move forward. I mean, it took 2 episodes to get here, but I'm super pumped.
Yeah, right on. This almost kind of things I felt that should have maybe happened last season to kind of, you know, give us that clean slate to get things moving. But I'm glad we are here now. So speaking of being here now, let's get right to the wall. John is back, and people are pretty fucking shocked. including Melisandre, who really thought, like, you know, her life was over, basically.
Oh, yeah. She seems to have a new lease on life. Her faith is so restored so quickly. I feel like John is almost her new Stannis.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely was like, oh, dude, like, stuff's not working. I don't know what's going on with my life, you know, like, rethinking that degree she signed up for. You know, and just like now she's like, oh, actually, you know what? I was right all along. So
it seemed like she surprised herself just as much as anybody else with that one. She wasn't ready.
Also, what I thought was super interesting is, like, when John woke up, his initial reaction wasn't anger. It was just kind of more about, like, which shows, like, really great how about John's character as a person, you know, how he just felt guilty right away. Like, he failed the Night's Watch, but not necessarily angry at the men for killing him, you know?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Which I thought was super sad, you know?
Yeah, you get that moment with Ollie, where he sort of, he doesn't want to do it, right? He doesn't want to execute them, but he knows he has to. At the same time, I thought it was super weird that no one, like, neither Alistair Thorne or Ollie or the guys being hung. I feel like if the guy I killed came back to life, I would be like, oh, you're my guy from now on. I will follow you to the end of the earth. You know, like, I thought something like that was gonna happen, but I was kind of surprised. Yeah, I was kind of surprised by the reactions there.
I actually respected the fuck out of Ollie, he didn't say anything. Like, what can you say, dude? Like, he's like, I stabbed you, you're back, there's nothing I have to say to you. Like, it was kind of awesome that he was just like, nah, let's just fucking do this.
Yeah, it was awesome. Weird. I mean, I think that's what's cool about the show. It was kind of a mature response to a really, really ridiculous situation. And I think what I was expecting was something a little more, something that would give more credence to the fantasy of it. And they didn't do it, which I thought was actually kind of cool and surprised me, though.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was super awesome. Also, John just called it quits. I think a lot of us assumed that he was going to, you know, like, kind of renounce the watch once he came back. And he did it in a way that was just so unlike, no grander, just like, fuck this. Yeah. Like, here, threw his, like, fucking coat over to Edison, which is like, dude, I'm leaving. Like, that was it. Like, it was great.
I thought it was executed perfectly. Like, the way I felt was like, yeah, absolutely. He did his job. You know, he died for the watch. And now he has no more obligation to them, which is probably a problem they've never had before. You know what I mean?
I gotta give props to Armani for calling this, too, because during our preseason lead up, you totally called this, and I don't think a lot of people did, to be honest. I mean, I think you're in a pretty small camp there.
Yeah. I don't want to say I'm always right about these things, but, you know, every once in a while. So speaking of small camps, we got Sam and Gilly going to Hornhill. We kind of assumed that Sam was going to maybe try to attempt to become a maester. I don't know how the show is going to show that, because you can't do that, like, overnight.
Right.
It's definitely not an associate's. It's more of a bachelor/PhD. So we'll see how that works out. But basically, he's going to go drop her off with his family. His family kind of hates him, so it's just going to be super awkward. There's really nothing else that's going to happen with that.
I'm pretty interested to meet Sam's family, actually. But yeah, other than that, this certain storyline, I almost forgot about it entirely, to be honest.
I bet Sam's family is like a bunch of finance bros. Like, that's why they hate him so much.
Well, his dad, his name I forget, but he's a big character in the books, and he's supposed to be kind of the best general in Westeros, as I remember.
Randall Tarly?
Randall Tarly, that's right, yeah. There was I had heard rumors that Ian McShane might be playing him this season, and if that's the case, it'd be a pretty big deal. But
let's move along into the biggest cock tease of this entire fucking series, in my opinion, the Tower of Joy. We open with the best night like fucking ever, Sir Arthur Dayne, aka the Sword of the Morning, wielding the Valyrian sword, Dawn. It was crazy. He's amazing. It was a great scene. Probably one of my, maybe like my third favorite fight scene ever in this series.
Yeah, it was executed real well. And all those stories you heard, Ned Stark talking about how he beat the Sword of the Morning.
Yes, and I think that's, okay, what's so crazy is how this show really, especially during that time, you know, a lot of history was just kind of, you know, spoken. Mm-hmm. You didn't really have not many people were literate, you know, a lot of people didn't write things down. So just kind of like how legends are told over time. Yeah. And do you think it kind of takes away from like like Ned Stark's legacy in a way that he didn't actually beat Sir Arthur Dayne?
Well, go ahead, TJ.
I was going to say, I think we'll have to see how this plays out because, I mean, there had to be some cover up here for him to come back and with Jon Snow. I don't think it takes away from his legacy in the sense that his honor is impugned unless there was no reason for him to lie about that. You know what I mean? Other than just for like...
I'm trying to... Well, like, the thing is, like, does it even... Like, given that it's a war and, like, he's an amazing warrior, like, no one would have been, like... Would it's almost like by any means necessary. You know what I mean? Like, there's no one who would have been like held that against him.
He stabbed him in
like,
the back.
How else were they gonna? There's no other way they were gonna defeat him. Like, this guy was gonna just slaughter all of them. So like, it's hard to really take a side with that. You know? I don't know.
I think. I mean, we talked last week about the Lannisters, right? And the idea of a villain versus a hero in this show. And to me, this totally changes things because he's a hypocrite. He's a hypocrite. He goes after Jaime Lannister for killing the Mad King. He allows a version of the story to be told throughout history that is shameful to Jaime Lannister. And on the other end of things, he basically does the exact same thing. He's like a younger kid. He's scared, right? Like in the moment, I thought, what was really cool? What?
Yeah, you can definitely tell they
were
all kids.
Yeah, like they're kids. Like, they're kids who are in like way, way over their heads, right? But he had the chance to tell the right story, you know, tell the right legend, and he didn't. And I don't know if I mean, I don't think we're gonna find a good reason for it. Maybe Lyanna is in the tower, but I mean, there's really no reason besides the fact that, you know, I think these kind of stories get told over and over again until they just sort of become accepted. And to the point that even Bran says, I've heard the story 100 times. I mean, he's shocked, right, by what he sees. And I think it's another cool wrinkle about the show. Why I love this show was back in this episode again, precisely because it sort of demystified Ned Stark as a true hero. And I know we're going to get to the faceless woman next, and I think it sort of ties in there, where a big part to me of this episode was thinking about vengeance, right? And sort of these long-term, these long storylines that these people have been fighting and these stories that people have been telling over and over again. And what you see with Arya is I think she, like us now, doesn't care about that list. You know, like, when she's being asked who's on your list, like, is Cersei Lannister? I mean, we don't care about it as much anymore. And I think neither does Arya, you know, because time sort of heals, you know? So all these people are left with in this society are stories. And being able to define or, like, tell the right one, I think, is super important. And so for me, like, Ned Stark is not, I mean, I don't think he's a villain now. I don't see him as being less heroic necessarily, but I find him more normal, I guess, you know. I find him to be a more just sort of regular guy, you know.
Not quite as
regular old Ned. Quite
as unbearably honorable as he was before.
Right, right.
Look, all I know is you ain't got to lie, Craig. You ain't got to lie. All right? And going into also Bran, you touched on this Bran being shocked. He actually calls out to Ned, and Ned kind of turns around. So do you think that's kind of a precursor to maybe there's a way to affect the past?
I hope not. Time travel stuff always kind of pisses me off, you know.
I would just love if, like, this all ended with, like, Bran going back in time, killing the Mad King way ahead of time. Like, and then none of this ever happened.
That's how they're going to wrap up the show. They're just going to have Bran fix it from the back. It's going to be,
from the back.
It will be...
Just Control-Alt-Delete this entire fucking story.
It'd be extremely disappointing if that's how this story wraps up.
Well, it's always, you know, it's always an option. It's always in the back. It can be in George's back pocket. Right. Moving into Dany, now she may or may not be joining the sorority of the Dash Kaleen, mostly because she didn't head over there. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't transfer your credits immediately. Sometimes they don't count anymore. Yeah. So it's kind of like that situation. So we don't really know if she's going to be able to hang, or they're going to send her. It's honestly, at this point, like, I don't want to say I don't care, but it's like, she doesn't want to be there anyway. So who cares if they accept her?
But if they don't accept her, like, what are the consequences, you know?
Like, trying to, like, slave her out, I guess. I don't know.
Either way, she's coming out of there. You know she is. Like, there's no way that she's
gonna... Yeah, there just really seems to be, like, no stakes with this. So I think that's why I'm more like, oh, whatever.
I suppose she leaves by herself, or she leaves with the whole Khalasar. In which case, she can then rip through all the free cities, right? But,
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But, if she just leaves her by herself, this is such a pointless, you know, little trip out east.
Right.
And moving in to, while we're in the east, moving into Meereen, so we figure out who the funders of the Harpy are. I can't say I was that surprised.
Right. No.
There was really no shocker there.
Was that?
That was kind of like a duh.
Was that supposed to be a shocker?
I mean, the way they built up the mystery of it, I kind of felt like it should have been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought they were going to point to a specific person that we could then make our
villain. I wanted them to be like, this guy. Yeah, exactly. And I was like, well, you mean these, like, rich assholes, which we all assumed? Right. Like, I don't know.
it was some religious zealots who were like, you're stepping on our traditions, you know? I think I always assumed it was slavers who want the slave trade to come back.
Yeah, like the KKK of Meereen, but whatever. So moving into basically now Varys and Tyrion are trying to hash a plan out to go after Astapor Yunkai and Volantis. So
we're gonna have to plan to retake those
cities
from the slavers who already retook the cities from them.
That whole scene was a little clumsy. I mean, by the end of it, I wasn't sure what their plan is. They're not gonna send armies there. They can't do that. But then she suggests that force is the only thing they'll respond to. Right? It's the only language.
Missandei's like, the only speak one language, and I've spoken it for years. And they kind of just play the pronoun game with it. I'm like, okay, so wait, is it force or is it not force? Because you're just confusing me now. Like, I think also that scene was kind of like way too much Tyrion fluff. Mm-hmm. Like the whole awkward trying to have a conversation with two people who have been enslaved their entire lives and can't really have conversations. Right. So just like, why are we doing this? Like,
I did like seeing Varys at work.
That was cool. Yeah. What was her name? Yeah, that was Varys that was at really work smooth. Was cool. He's a smooth operator.
You always hear him talk about all the things he accomplishes, but his demeanor with the woman from the brothel was pretty great, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was definitely great. And we also got to see his little birds, which are actually, I thought that was a great reveal that I never once thought they were children.
Yeah.
I think I did, and I'm not sure why. I believe there's like a hint of it in one of the episodes. It's like one child that he sees or he's sending away as someone is coming in to meet him. Either that or it might have been in one of the books. So I could be confusing that. But another thing where it's sort of made to seem like a big secret revealed, and I don't remember 100% if it was.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you knew about it beforehand, it couldn't have been that much of a reveal. But
that's what I thought.
I didn't know that they were children.
Yeah, I didn't.
I thought it was a combination of beggars and like, you know.
Yeah, because it's not, but it's not people. Just children. Yeah, right? It's right. Like people who it's like waiters, right, at restaurants, or it's maids. You know, it's all these people that hang around. They're sort of faceless around. The elite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, kids are even better though, because like, no one pays attention to kids, yeah. Like especially poor kids. Like, what? No, they like don't exist to people. So I don't know. I'm sure, like as you mentioned, it's like totally a network of people. I thought it was great to get to see them. Like, you know,
him recruiting
there.
Yeah. He's like a
Fagin. We get kind of a. Well, speaking of little birds, we get a kind of a, I don't want to say a throwaway scene, but we get kind of like, you know, a meeting of the High Council. The Queen of Thorns is there. Mm-hmm. They briefly kind of say like, hey, we need to go rescue Margaery. Nothing's really happening with the storyline right now. I kind of want them to kind of scoot it along. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have anything you want to add on to that.
It struck me that Jaime and Cersei could really use their dwarf brother, you know, in times like these. They seem really sort of outmatched.
Yeah, they definitely are not like good at diplomacy. Like they don't want them in the High Council. Then they get in there and like basically forcing their way in through Sir Robert Strong. Like if he wasn't there, like they were like, okay, if you're gonna stay here and try and talk to us, we're not gonna talk to you. We're gonna all walk out.
Right.
It's super sad that they've gotten to a point where they can't even like communicate with people who are supposed to be on their side.
How did you feel about the sort of tied in here, but the next scene with the High Sparrow and Tommen?
Tommen goes in strong, like he's like, you know what, I'm gonna tell you what's up. Then gets in there and like immediately is reverted back into the boy being taught a lesson.
Right, and he takes the lesson. Like he sits down, you know, sees smiles drawn on his lips. Yeah, Tommen. Hasn't seemed to learn any. He just hasn't seemed to learn anything yet. You know, in terms of how to deal with people and in order to be a king. You know, he still seems, I don't know, behind the curve when it comes to dealing with anybody he's supposed to have authority over.
Doesn't it seem to be suggested that Tommen could follow a really great positive path here if he actually sticks with the teachings of the High Sparrow? Like the High Sparrow seems like a really good dude, and I think it's
that. I mean,
we're as viewers on the side of the Lannisters sort of now, right? So because we like Jaime, and Jaime's on the side of Cersei, so I was all in on Tommen going in and fucking everybody up in there. And then by the end of that scene, I was like, oh, you know, maybe Tommen needs to learn from this guy and sit down and actually be a positive ruler for this.
Yeah, it's like we go in there already, you know, like real turn, like, fuck, get this dude. Like, then we get in there and like, he's talking. And we're like, you know what? Actually, we're calm too now. Right. We're like, you know what? Maybe we don't need to fight. That's right.
Tommen seems really impressionable, but it might be a good thing. I think maybe you're right about that, you know. He just
back onto your point really quickly, Greg, I think we would have been more on the High Sparrow side if he was taking people that we were, like, all the way opposed to. Like, taking Cersei, a lot of people could get behind her being, you know, punished. But as far as Margaery and her brother, like, well, they didn't really do anything to anybody. So it's just, like, especially the crimes they were taken in for, like, not ones that people would be really opposed to. Like, her brother's gay, and she kind of just saw that he was gay, and she did nothing. So that seems kind of ridiculous. So I think it's harder for a lot of us to sympathize with the Sparrows because they're just like, this is just...
Totally, you know. But I do think there is something about the consistency of this idea that, and it's, you know, it's no different than, like, Catholicism, right? This idea that we're all sinners, even if maybe we're not being accused exactly of the correct thing, we all have done something that we should be penitent for, right? So Margaery has certainly plotted, right? I mean, she's not above everyone else in that sense. At least it's suggested that she, you know, she and her grandmother, like, they're posturing. She may or may not have known about Joffrey's murder, right? So...
But she didn't exactly turn her grandmother in for
it. Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, you know, the having this character there who's sort of is actually a moral force. I don't know. I find it super super interesting. If like the Lannisters take him out, I don't know how I feel about that.
Okay, wait. So, like, I mean, there's only one way. Either all the Lannisters die. Or, like, all the Sparrows die. So if you had to pick one, you'd want the Sparrows to win.
I love how complicated and interesting, right, the Lannisters are as characters. But if you're just trying to, like, if you really have to be honest with yourself, I think, about who is more ethical and who's a person that you should be rooting for, even if you're not, I think at this point, the High Sparrow has been very consistent, you know, on the side of what he believes is right and what seems to be actually right in this very messed up world.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's possible. Okay. I mean, if you're into the theocratic style government, but maybe I think it would be a better idea if Tom and, you know, his legacy was to strike some kind of balance between, you know, a humanistic and theocratic, you know, ruling style, because I think we see that there are some problems with the society, and one of them, like Armani mentioned, was Margaery's brother being arrested for being gay, and or what was it, buggery or something? I can't remember what the crime was, but
buggery.
But I mean, that's problematic in itself. So maybe if Tommen can step up here and see the qualities and, you know, a governing style that serves both ways, both practices.
That is a very good point. Let's be very clear that these guys are a ethical force by, like, 1500s, standards. Yeah. So, the bar is super low. And I'm by no means defending all their beliefs. But I think... I was surprised by how much reason and wisdom I found in his speech to Tommen. And there have been these suggestions of previous Targaryen rulers who were more faithful, who were actually better rulers, or at least more humanistic, sort of, to the masses. So, I don't know. I mean, I think when we sort of come to a head with it, it's going to be a lot more complicated than maybe initially it seemed, you know?
Okay, yeah. All right, speaking of things that got more complicated than initially you thought they would be, Arya is apparently now a faceless woman.
Do you buy that?
I thought I liked it.
Do you buy that?
I was like, oh, okay, wait, okay, so I love that you just asked me that, because initially when... Jaqen Gar presented her with the Kool-Aid and was like, hey, if you are truly faceless, you have nothing to fear by drinking this. Just because she regains her sight does not mean that was, like, the sign of, like, she wasn't ready. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't know if maybe it's another curse put upon her for later or what other implications it might have. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm always thinking about sort of the construct of this story, right? So if you have Arya, who's just a faceless man, like, Jaqen H'Ghar is super cool as a character, right? He's like a superhero who can just kill people, right? But he's cool because there's no stakes to him and he's not really a main character. So if we're gonna do that to one of our main characters, we're distancing ourselves from them. And I don't know how that serves the story going forward.
Yeah, exactly. And touching on also her training, I don't remember the name of the girl who trained her. I don't think we ever got her name. She asked Arya. Oh, wait, go ahead.
As far as I know, a girl has no name, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, she asked Arya who's on her list. They played, like, the game that Arya played when she first got to the House of Black and White. And she asked all the people that were on Arya's list. And when Arya says Walder Frey, the girl makes a face and then asks her if she has any other names on the list. So do you think the girl is expecting her Arya to, like, name her?
I think.
Or
that's what I think was.
Is holding a name
back.
That's
how I read that scene. I thought that when Arya asked her back, what name would a girl like me to name? I think that was kind of her way of saying, yeah, I'd name you if you gave me a name right now. You know, that's how I read that scene. I'm not sure if that was entirely correct, but.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing, I also thought about that as well, and I was thinking, well, I mean, technically, why would she want to kill her? I mean, the girl she's been training her, that's, like, her job. Like, it, you know, like, I don't know why.
I think she's checking, like, her for vengeance, right?
Yeah.
That's a great point.
She's just trying to see if there's a higher wisdom now sort of beaten into her rather than just basic vengeance, right?
Literally
with a stick.
Hopefully next episode maybe we'll get some her first, like, official assignment in killing.
Yeah, that would be great if she got some kind of small name that maybe we've seen before.
All right, moving on to someone who kills people a lot, Ramsay in Winterfell. And I thought it was super interesting just speaking on to what the Umber, I don't know which Umber it was, but he's basically saying, like, we're not making oaths anymore because y'all niggas ain't up.
Like, what good are oaths?
Which I love. I just love that we're at this point where, like, I'm not making oaths to anyone. Like, this is, you guys aren't keeping them. This is so stupid and it's so true.
Right.
Like, Ramsay is not about shit. So it's just so great that, like, someone's finally saying, like, dude, like, no, we're not making any promises here. I'm just saying I'm down with you right now, but we know what the Bolton's really about.
Yeah, we can ride together, but.
Well, I think, and again, I mean, right, the episode is called Oathbreaker, and it's no coincidence that flashback is a sort of truthful telling of a story that everyone thought about Ned Stark, right? It's this, the whole episode is sort of turning in on tradition, right? And it's, I thought with that scene specifically, it was really sort of, it was interesting that Ramsay desperately wanted that tradition. It's like he's this guy who has never had it in his life, and now he's reached this position, and he sort of wants the pageantry, you know, to go along with it. And then this guy comes in and is like, no, we're not playing that game. You know, I know what you did. You killed your father. It's fine. Like, I don't give a shit. But we're gonna call a spade now, right? And
yeah, exactly.
And I really like that scene, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty refreshing.
Let's just keep it real. Like, just especially, like, like you mentioned, we're used to so much pageantry and so much ridiculous. Like, trace of the point here. Like, let's just not, no pretense. Like, we all know what you're really about. And I also like how we brought it back to how Rob originally broke his oath. You know, like, technically, we all feel bad for the young wolf, but technically Rob didn't keep up his end of the deal either. So it's just like,
mm-hmm. Well, it's a
if you don't
the idea of tradition in this world is basically deception, right? Like the people who sort of beat their chest the loudest in defense of honor, oaths, they tend to be the people who get either killed or are in fact the biggest liars. I think everyone besides maybe Brienne is like that.
So true.
You know, she's actually the one person who seems to actually believe in it. She has a true faith in being a knight and, you know, and being of a certain way, right? A certain old way of mm-hmm. living, professing who you are and actually acting that way. So, you know, if it's going to be more like this going forward, I think it'll be interesting to see where Brienne goes, you know, because I think the show is trying to say something about it.
Yeah, right on. And going into our big reveal, we've got one more wolf down. Shaggy Dog is dead, and Osha and Rickon are now captured. And I have literally no idea what Ramsay's going to do to them.
I mean, I might have idea, just because he treats everybody the same way when they're, like, his prisoners at this point. But, I mean, I don't want to see it happen, I'll say that much.
I have this...
I don't...
No, go ahead.
I just... So, a part of me is, like, maybe he'll keep him alive as, like, a bargaining chip for the other northern houses.
Maybe his plaything.
But a part of me is, like, he doesn't want any Starks alive, so he might just kill him there in, like, maybe the worst way possible. Like, I really don't know what he's gonna do.
I think something about the way he wanted the Umber to kneel for him, and, you know, something about him taking that mantle to me actually makes him safer to me. Like, I think he's going to try and act the part of the Warden of the North, of the Lord of Winterfell. I don't think he's going to be less brutal when there's opportunity, but I have this feeling like now that he's in that position, Osha and Rickon are safer. You know, like, they're going to be used for bargaining chips. They're going to be used for something, you know, that's going to be sort of...
Well, Osha's worthless, though.
Yeah, she's a wildling.
She's really, like, Rickon is maybe has a hope for surviving this just simply because he's a Stark, but literally Osha's just, like, it would mean nothing to Ramsay. Like, I'm actually really scared for her at this point.
Maybe information, you know, she's been around, she's been a wildling, she's lived with the Starks, worked for them. You know, I think if they wanted to, they could keep her in, they could find a pretty, like, reasonable way to keep her around.
I feel like if this were, like, a company that was doing layoffs, she's, like, the one secretary who just, like, sucks anyway. Like, she has no hope in this. I just don't think she has any hope in this situation.
Okay, so you think
you know?
She's dead in, like, what? Should we do, like, an over-under, like, next 3 episodes?
I'm real. Like, the thing is, I love her. I love her character.
Well,
she's,
Armani, you gotta vote with your, you know... Either your head or your heart. Right.
She's dead. She's so
dead.
She's
savvy enough, though. She might have a way of getting up on Tyrion. You know, she's a wildling. She's pretty... Ramsay, right. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I think she might have a way of getting over on him. Either it means escaping or wounding him in some way and escaping or somehow trying to... I mean, just because reintroducing them into the story at this point has to lead somewhere to me. I feel like, you know, Rickon, he's been so pointless this whole time.
He's just hanging out. What do you mean? Like, he had nothing to do. He just got back.
So I think,
like,
now is
dude,
the time
like,
to,
stop giving
to
so
have
much
a
shit.
Point. Like, this is going to be this point to get over on Ramsay. And
well,
they're going to do that together.
We're definitely approaching, like, a Stark family reunion, right? Because Sansa's heading up there, and it looks like we'll see more of her in the next episode. Rickon, maybe he gets traded, or maybe he's, like, you know, he's held hostage for Jon to come down.
He might be on his way anyway.
I haven't been...
We don't know where he's headed.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Like, touching on really quick, basically they set the stage for what's going to be the Wildling battle. The Umbers are saying, like, hey, dude, we're the northernmost house. Wildlings are coming down. Y'all got to come help us out. Like, so clearly that's where the battle's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
I mean, clearly Ramsay's done. I mean, Jon's going to come by and kill him. I just really don't think Osha's going to make it.
Okay, well, you're a resident three-eyed raven, so...
Yeah, it's probably a safe bet to go with Armani on this.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up the episode. Do you guys have, like, any last-minute predictions, statements, things you want to throw out there?
Do we think that we see what's in the tower by the next episode, or are they going to hold this out throughout the whole season for us?
I don't know. I'm actually...
It'll be super annoying if they don't, right? Also... If they don't just show us in an episode or two.
Well, the thing is that kind of bumps me out. It's like, I'm really disappointed more and more that the next book isn't out yet. Like, the more that's revealed to us that hasn't been written, it's just the more that I'm just like, oh my god. Like, is George going to feel pressured to write some BS twist just to, like, make it seem different in the book at this point?
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
Also, well, I'm tired of this being teased to us.
I feel like if we find out about Lyanna... and Jon Snow being, you know, what would we call him, a son of ice and fire. This is probably gonna, like, be a big moment for, if it's somehow linked to Jon, I think it's gonna be a big moment. So I'm hoping that we find out something next episode about Lyanna in that tower.
Dude, if they're gonna reveal this to us, I guarantee it's not gonna be until the finale.
Ah, yeah, because they got the 13 episodes after that.
Because this is definitely, like, one of the biggest, like, mysteries of the entire series.
Oh, yeah, so you think they're just going to tease us, huh, the whole season?
Yeah.
I'm more with Bran than I ever been. Like, let's get this show on the road. I want to see what's happening. Like, stop taking
that. Yeah, he's suddenly gone from, like, a bench player to MVP of the season.
Right. his storyline is definitely taking off. And I'm loving it. Just want to see where it goes.
Yeah, well, right on, guys. Well, thank you so much for getting onto this cast with me. I just want to give a shout-out to Curtis. He asked about when we were going to record, so I'm super happy that there's people out there listening who are, like, looking forward to this now. So if you guys have any pointers or things you want to hear say, or, like, you know, if you think we're doing something wrong, or, like, I don't know,
yeah.
Like, any feedback, totally appreciate it.
Absolutely. Constructive criticism, right? Let's be... Yeah.
Let's
put that caveat.
Yeah, I mean, or just fucking get on there and just, like, troll the shit out of this.
I don't like your voices.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much.
Right, thanks, Armani.